At CAS, we curate and connect the world's scientific knowledge, weaving a fabric of innovation that reveals the hindsight, insight, and foresight innovators need to accelerate breakthroughs. CAS, the fabric of innovation.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, November 22nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Over the past year, a lot more people have bought cryptocurrencies, and that's created opportunities for hackers looking to steal those digital assets. And while in the past these thieves often would target big investors, celebrities, people with large crypto holdings, increasingly they're going after small fish, everyday investors with modest holdings. On today's show, WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti joins us to discuss why small investors are being targeted and why their cell phones are crucial to carrying out these hacks. That's after these headlines. After 11 weeks of testimony from former investors and patients, the prosecution in the criminal fraud case of Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes rested. On Friday, the defense took over, with Holmes herself taking the stand. Her legal team aims to persuade jurors that whatever her missteps, she didn't intend to defraud investors or customers. Our reporter Heather Somerville has been covering the trial and was in the courtroom when Holmes began testifying in her own defense.
She had about an hour of testimony before court ended for the day, and she offered a very polished account of how she conceived of the idea for Theranos and her early days working to develop the technology and build her startup. It should come as no surprise that Ms. Holmes was confident, composed, and appeared very friendly on the stand. She smiled a lot at the jury and at her attorney. Her ability to be poised under pressure like this is likely one of the reasons she took the risk of testifying in her own defense. But it's a move that also opens her up to potentially brutal cross-examinations. And what she says, how she says it, and how the jury responds to her will probably, more than any of the prior 11 weeks of this trial, determine the outcome of this case.
Holmes is expected to return to the stand today. Ford and electric car maker Rivian say they've scrapped plans to build an electric vehicle together. Ford is an investor in Rivian, and the pair announced plans to develop an EV together in 2019. Rivian, which made its debut on the public markets earlier this month, said Ford remains an ally in its plans for an electrified future. A Ford spokesman said both companies' EV plans have advanced far enough to give each confidence they could move ahead independently. The Pentagon invited four major tech companies, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Oracle, to bid on a multi-billion-dollar cloud computing contract. The project replaces the ill-fated JEDI contract, which was caught up in litigation and objections from Congress. This new project, called the Joint Warfighter Cloud Capability, is seen as a win for all four companies, but especially Amazon. It argued the JEDI contract had unfairly been given to Microsoft due to political meddling by former President Donald Trump, a charge the Pentagon denies. We report that Roku plans to start producing a lot more original content for its streaming channel. Roku, which powers more smart TVs and streaming boxes in the U.S. than any of its competitors, plans to make 50 new shows over the next 2 years. The company's Roku channel, launched 4 years ago, offers free ad-supported content for more than 200 media outlets on its devices. It hopes adding more of its own shows will lead to higher ad revenue. And tired of relying solely on algorithms to find you a date? Well, Match.com is now offering help from human matchmakers. Members who sign up for this service will pay roughly $5 a week to have two profiles selected by Match's dating coaches. Those profiles will be chosen from the same algorithmically generated pool the service already provides. Dating apps are competing to add enhanced fee-based services. Match said it added the feature because the pandemic has added urgency to some people looking for long-term relationships. All right, coming up, more small investors are getting into crypto investing. So are the hackers targeting their accounts. So how are they emptying investors' digital wallets? We'll have the details after the break.
What's important to you? What drives you? What do you want your wealth to do? At PNC Private Bank, we call that your why. And we want to understand yours. Maybe it's creating a legacy, buying a home, or enjoying your retirement. Whatever your goals are, we'll work with you to build a personalized wealth plan to help you achieve it. So tell us, what's your why? To learn more, please visit pnc.com/private bank. Copyright 2021, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. All rights reserved, PNC Bank National Association, member FDIC.
Your cell phone holds a lot of information for you and about you. And while the idea of losing your device is scary enough, fewer people think about the consequences of losing control of their phone numbers. But that's just what some hackers are after. They're using a technique called SIM swapping to gain control of victims' accounts and empty out their digital wallets. As more people invest in cryptos, this type of crime is on the rise, and it's gotten the attention of regulators, police, and phone companies. But no one's sure what the best way to fight it is. Joining us to break this all down is WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Zoe.
So explain to me how this hack works.
So it's a pretty low-tech hack in the grand scheme of things. Basically, a hacker will use data, either publicly accessible data, hacked data, or they will falsify data that your phone company, your wireless carrier, uses to verify your identity when you're trying to switch your device. So if I buy a new iPhone, buy a new Android device, I want to make sure my number gets to that device. A hacker can basically game that system, take over your device for as little as a matter of minutes, and then reset some of the passwords on the various accounts you use, whether it's your social media accounts or your cryptocurrency accounts and financial accounts. And that's where we see a growing number of some of these attacks taking place and really hurting consumers.
God, that seems really easy. I store everything on my phone. I mean, are the phone companies doing anything about this?
Yeah, for a determined hacker, it is easy. I mean, it's important to note what the wireless carriers say, which is that more than 99% of SIM swaps are legitimate. These are people changing their phone number to a new device. But if you multiply that across the entire U.S. wireless market, you know, a couple hundred million people, that could be thousands or tens of thousands of people that are experiencing fraud and theft every year because of this. Phone companies have tweaked a lot of their security measures to make this more difficult. One upstart wireless carrier called US Mobile, for example, has totally taken out, you know, customer service phone calls from this process. So if you want to actually conduct a SIM swap, you have to go through their app, which allows this company to track your biometric data, and it takes human error more or less out of the process. But the sort of tension here is that all of these companies want to make it as easy as possible for you to change your phone. So they're weighing sort of this trade-off between the ease of use for users and their underlying business model versus these enhanced security measures that could protect consumers in some respects, but also make things more difficult for sort of day-to-day usage of their services and others.
Right. So now they've got access to your crypto accounts, to all the things on your phone. I mean, what about the places that hold the digital wallets, Binance and Coinbase, are they doing anything? Can they do anything if somebody's on the accounts?
So one thing that's important to sort of set out as table stakes here is that Coinbase has grown tremendously over the last couple of years. They have tens of millions of users, and they have about 7 or 8 million users who conduct transactions at least once per month. Over the course of that growth, their account takeover rate has stayed mostly steady. So we can sort of deduce from that the number of times people are getting their accounts taken over on these cryptocurrency exchanges is really going through the roof. That said, what these companies do generally is they try to use technology in their backends that basically provide a risk score where they sort of slice and dice the data from your account, the IP address from which you're trying to make a change to your account or a change to your password. They will assign you a risk score. And then they will either allow you to make a subsequent trade in cryptocurrency, or if it seems more suspicious, if someone is making a password change in the middle of the night, for example, they might put a freeze or hold on that account for a certain amount of time.
Okay, so that's what the private companies are doing about it. But what about the government? I mean, this is theft.
So on the regulatory side, the Federal Communications Commission has proposed rules for the wireless carriers to tighten up their procedures for SIM swaps. That could take a number of different forms. The FCC could push companies to only use certain types of data, data that's more personalized to you as a user or maybe ephemeral in various ways in the form of like a one-time PIN code. Regulators could also require companies to notify customers or even put holds on SIM swap requests. So imagine a 24-hour waiting period between when you, Zoe, call in to initiate a SIM swap and when your new phone can actually start working. I mean, in the meantime, law enforcement is trying to get its hands around this because crimes against smaller investors, thefts of $10,000 or $50,000, are in some ways more difficult to respond to. I talked to one investigator in the Bay Area who basically said to me that it's harder for him to get a prosecutor interested in a case with a low dollar amount compared to when you have a case involving $1 million or $5 million or $50 million. So what he's doing in response to that is he's trying to work across different jurisdictions, both to, you know, streamline the process of trying to chase these crooks down, but also to bump up the total dollar amounts involved in these cases. And of course, that raises a bunch of logistical questions about whether they can keep pace with the rate at which this crime is occurring.
How are the phone companies reacting to the idea of new regulation?
They don't like it, is the long and short of it. I mean, they say a couple of different things. First and foremost, they say that creating regulations for such a fast-moving type of crime will basically give a blueprint to hackers of knowing what types of data phone companies are required to use, and then they can essentially plot out their attacks in response to that. Furthermore, these companies say that they need to remain flexible in response to this stuff. So if the FCC requires them to use certain types of data for SIM swap requests, they will be less likely to be able to switch their procedures in the future as hackers change up what they're doing.
So David, I wonder from the hacker's perspective, I mean, a lot more people are investing in crypto, but why go after, you know, investors with such small amounts?
I mean, first and foremost, there's a lot of them to choose from. Secondly, a lot of folks who get into crypto do so on a whim. They want to get in while the market's hot. They do so without maybe thinking about or investing in some enhanced security measures. Maybe they don't have two-factor authentication on their various accounts. Maybe they have two-factor authentication that's based on text messaging, which makes their phone a particular target. Additionally, with cryptocurrency, you know, it's fundamentally different from your, you know, checking account with Chase, right? Banks are highly regulated. They tend to have security measures in place. There is some friction whenever you are moving money through your bank accounts. Whereas with cryptocurrency, the whole point of it is for it to be fast. It's totally digital. It's somewhat difficult to trace in certain respects. As soon as you make a trade through an app on your phone, that money is gone, or it's invested, as the case may be. And that's great if you want to make a lot of different trades in a very quick manner, but it's also great if you're a crook and you want to steal money and conduct transactions out of people's accounts.
So what's next then? I mean, this situation seems like it might get worse if so many more people are investing in cryptocurrencies.
It'll almost certainly get worse in the sense of absolute numbers, given how many more people are starting to use their phones for banking or for crypto investments over time. But to sort of tweak the question slightly differently, the key is whether the actual rate of investors who suffer from this sort of fraud goes up or down. And as of now, it doesn't seem like that number is really budging. To take a step back here, the government doesn't have the muscle to tackle every $10,000 or $20,000 crypto thief. So a few lawyers who I've spoken with say that they've worked with blockchain analysts and cryptocurrency exchanges to trace their clients' funds that have been stolen after SIM swaps, sometimes successfully recovering them. But that's definitely a minority of cases. Other victims have tried suing the phone companies, but that could take years and it's no guarantee that you'll get your money back. Mostly the folks who I spoke with over the past several weeks, they just feel pretty down about this. They plowed cash into cryptocurrency to try to get into the market while it was hot, and they ended up just losing a big chunk of their savings. I mean, these aren't financial institutions by any stretch. These are just people with jobs and kids and mortgages. And in these cases, at least, they're mostly out of luck.
All right. That was our reporter, David Uberti. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Zoe.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
20 years ago, energy giant Enron was considered one of the most innovative companies in the world. But in late summer 2001, the company's top executive resigned out of the blue. That set my colleague Rebecca Smith and me on a reporting journey with an end we never imagined. I'm John M. Schweiler from The Wall Street Journal. On our new podcast, Bad Bets, we unravel big business dramas that have had a big impact on our world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.